live from our national studios here in Accra, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. I am Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, District Assembly's Common Fund misappropriated according to special audit report. But who supervises disbursement and the use of the funds? When fire becomes a bad master, what should be done? And Tripoli on fire. Can Colonel Gaddafi survive the last onslaught of the rebels? And who really will control Libya after it all? Before we get to the stories, however, Barbara Yakubu is here with a summary of the day's news.
President Atamills has arrived in Cape Town to start a four-day visit to South Africa. In his company is the First Lady Nadu and some ministers of state. He was met on arrival by the South African Minister for International Relations and an enthusiastic Ghanaian community there. Parliament today failed to discuss a $3 billion credit facility from the China Development Bank. The majority leader, Kletu Savoka, who appealed for the discussion to be shifted to tomorrow, so the Joint Committee report of the Ministry of Finance as well as the Poverty Reduction Strategy Committee were not ready, hence the postponement. And the Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, Samuel Ampafo, has warned district assemblies that anyone caught to be involved in the misappropriation of the district assembly's common fund will be dealt with. Speaking to Regio Ghana on the revelations of the audit report, Mr. Ampafo advised DCEs and local government staff to learn lessons from the audit report. Back to you, Kingsley.
Thank you. As Behind the News, live on all our regional FM stations and also reaching you from Accra, Akufo-Addo, you can get us on Sunrise FM and Radio Central in Cape Coast together with Ubuntu 96.5 FM Tema. The local government ministry today hit the headlines for alleged acts of financial impropriety and indiscretions at the office of the administrator of District Assembly's Common Fund. An audit report carried out into the accounts of the DACA between 2005 and 2008 alleged a chop-chop and diversion of funds totaling more than 1.1 million Ghana cedis. Local Government Minister Samuel Ofosu-Ampofo is talking tough, saying those implicated in the wrong transfer and exchange of funds have been asked to cough up or find themselves on the wrong side of the law. We are trying to establish contact. Yes, I get the signal that we've managed to establish contact with the local government minister, Mr. Samuel Ofosu-Ampofo. You are welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yes. This is a special audit report. The questions being posed are, why are we concentrating between 2005 and 2008? And why are we not taking action so far, since perhaps some of these things might have been discovered earlier?
Well, I cannot tell how the Auditor General and his team conduct their activities. But once an audit is conducted, it has a purpose. And you will recall that the Common Fund Administrator, the old one who had held that office for a very long time, was giving way to a new administrator. I believe that perhaps the audit was conducted to clean the slate to enable the new man to take office. That is why perhaps the audit was conducted on the activities of the Disassembly Common Fund. I am just conjecturing. I don't know exactly what led to the auditing, but you know, the audit service is empowered by law to conduct, audit into the financial management of ministries, departments, and agencies, and submit their recommendation for various actions to be taken. So I think it is a lawful audit that was undertaken.
Lawful audit, but the question that we are still asking is, when you take over, can't we just check quickly the books and discover what might have gone wrong so that even before we wait for the audit, we are talking about 2005 and we are in 2011, 6 years, something can be done as a remedial measure before we bring in the auditors?
Well, I think generally, if you look at Parliament, it is just recently that the Auditor General has managed to fast track the audit process. Otherwise, audit reports are always behind time, and you know, it takes a lot of time for transactions to take place, and then after the transactions have taken place, the Auditor General goes into this. And so, in Parliament, for instance, the Auditor General was always, his accounts was always between 2 and 3 years late. But I think that the situation has improved recently. And I cannot explain why, but it's difficult. For instance, if you come to take office, as I came to the Ministry of Local Government, with all the agencies under me, it is difficult for me to, right from the word go, be able to look into all the books and determine what transactions have taken place and which ones were rightfully done and which ones had some questions to answer. It is very difficult. That is why it takes the Auditor General to conduct some of these audits. It could be forensic audit. It could be a special audit. It could be a routine audit. And when the findings come out, we look at the findings and recommendations and try to act on it.
Yeah, let's look at some of the findings. It is so revealing that monies were being paid up, being given up for things not done. In this case, what do you do immediately?
Well, the immediate things we are doing, in fact, when this report came, I also referred it to the new administrator to take a look at it and also try and do some cross-checkings and other things there, and then we'll take it up from there. So once there have been recommendations as to what is to be done, what were found not to be in place, who has been found culpable of mismanaging or misappropriating funds, we have to use the due process to get the people involved to, once it's been established, then they will have to comply with the recommendation of the report, either to refund monies allegedly misappropriated or misapplied by them, or they see the full results of the law.
Naturally, perhaps we want more light thrown on this particular issue. We talk about the District Assembly's Common Fund. Give us a little bit of education on it. What is it? How should it be dismissed?
Generally, the District Assembly Common Fund, by law, the Constitution has stipulated that initially it was not less than 5% of the total national revenue was paid into the District Assembly Common Fund for onward distribution to the Minister, Metropolitan Minister and District Assemblies for their development projects. And later on, I think Parliament did an upward adjustment, and it came to 7.5%. So as we speak now, it's about 7.5% of total revenue is paid to the Common Fund account, and it is administered by this Assembly Common Fund administrator. What administrator does, at the beginning of every financial year, the administrator comes to Parliament with a certain formula, having in mind some quantum of money that is expected to be paid into the Assembly's Common Fund. So the Common Fund administrator will then come to Parliament with the formula. The formula has a lot of variables. It looks at the districts in general, where the monies are supposed to be given to the district. And the normal formula that they've been using takes cognizance of the state of development of the district. For instance, looks at the population of the district. It looks at the number of schools in the district, number of hospitals in the district, the length of tarred roads in the district, the water distribution system in the district. And so it has about four factors. The first factor is the need factor. And the need factor emphasizes the depravity of the district, the need for some of the very urgent economic, socioeconomic needs of the people are factored into the formula. Then we have the equalizing factor. The equalizing factor is that an equal amount of money is shared to all the British assemblies. So whether you are big or small, that is an equalizing factor. That money, everybody gets equal. Then we look at the need factor, and then we look at the responsive factor. The responsive factor normally takes into consideration the assembly's ability to generate revenue. And so that if you are able to generate more revenue this year than the previous year, you are rewarded through the responsive factor by a certain percentage point. So all these factors go into it, and then the formula is then placed before Parliament. When they come to Parliament, they present about two or three scenarios. Parliament look at all the scenarios and select the best scenarios which satisfy majority of the district. When this is passed, it is expected that for every quarter, a certain amount of money is paid to the this Assembly Common Fund Administrator, which is then distributed to the various metropolitan, municipal, and these assemblies. The assemblies in turn have their own supplementary budget, which determines the use of that resources. And so that is the process that the Assembly Common Fund goes through.
Well, Honorable Minister, please hold on. We'll come back to you quickly, but we have your colleague, Kwadwiajie Dakun, who is a former Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, joining us on the line. You are welcome, sir, to the show.
Thank you.
We are presently discussing the District Assembly's Common Fund, and so for some people has outlined exactly how it functions. But for the present situation where an audit report is revealing that monies were used for things not supposed to have been, for it to have been channeled into or perhaps paid into things not done, what exactly did you do during your administration to ensure that all these things were done well?
Thank you for the opportunity. I think we have to get one thing clear. The Auditor General lumped the report to cover a period 2005 to 2008. But if you look at the details, you see the headline which was given by the graphic created the impression that these malfeasance, if I could call it that way, happened within that period, which was spanning from 2005 to 2008. But when you go to the story itself, you will find specific times when these things happened. And those days when these things happened, I had not even been to the ministry. In fact, it's around 2005, 2006. I went to the ministry in 2007 and 2008. So in the first way, it would be difficult for me to answer the question as to what happened, because it didn't occur during my tenure of office in that ministry. I was there earlier from 2003 to 2004. Then I went back to that ministry 2007 July to 2009 January, 6 January.
Yeah.
So that is the point I want to clear with regards to the headline and the story itself. Now, the Administrator for Common Fund, as explained by the Minister, has been given specific functions and mandate. And in fact, the appointment of the Administrator for Common Fund is done by the President, even in consultation with the Council of State. So the Administrator for Common Fund, although comes under the supervision of the Minister for Local Government, you see that he occupies a unique position. And so he is one of those people, like the Get Fund Administrator and so on, who present their report, the formula for the distribution of the Common Fund, which was mentioned earlier by the Minister. It's not even presented through the Minister for Local Government. He presents it to the House, but because he cannot come to debate or talk on issues in the chamber, the whole House constitutes itself into committee of the whole, which is chaired by the first deputy speaker.
Yeah.
And that is also what happens with the in the case of the Gett Fund Administrator. So these positions are unique. The Gett Fund Administrator, although may be working closely with the Minister for Education, the Minister for Education may not have direct control over the Gett Fund Administrator. It's the same way which happens with the Common Fund Administrator. Because the appointing, the appointments and so on, especially the Minister for Common Fund, has been specified by law to be done by the President in consultation with the Council of State. His removal is just like by the President or by death or by resignation. So it's a unique thing. And it will be difficult for any minister to seem to be dictating to the Administrator for Common Fund.
So is there no way at all that the minister, perhaps even acting as a member of the whole, can suggest a few things or even query that this is a body that is existing, even though maybe not directly supervising it, these are the needs of the assemblies and perhaps it can inform disbursements?
You said the needs of the assembly.
The needs, yes. Of the various assemblies.
The minister cannot talk about the needs of the assembly and therefore direct the administrator as to which assembly should get what. Mind you, those of us, some of us who were ministers in that ministry were also members of parliament. So that if I had the opportunity also to talk about needs of assembly and therefore give directives as to what should go into the formula, perhaps I may also try to influence it in favor of my district or constituency. But the needs factor, the responsive factor, and all the factors which were mentioned by the minister, all these are collated from various. For example, when it comes to education, the Minister of Education is there to give all this information to the Administrator for Common Fund. When it comes to the rules, they also look at other agencies which deal with rules, so that the administrator has his own machinery to be able to look at all this and come out with that statistics which will inform him as to how he should prepare his formula.
That is fine. Please hold on, Mr. Jada. We'll come back to you in a jiffy. But I want to come back to you, Mr. Fusuampofu. Looking at this, don't you see it with hindsight as perhaps a gap in the Constitution?
There is a functional relationship between the Ministry of Local Government and the Common Fund Administrator, and if the minister will admit.
I agree to that. A functional relationship.
If you can please hold on for us so that we'll come back to you after we've listened to Mr. Ofosanpofo.
You see, I'm saying that there is a functional relationship between the administrator and the ministry. It is the only ministry which deals directly with the administrator on matters of policies, on matters of what goes into what. In fact, the administrator does a lot of consultation with the Minister for Local Government, even when the formula is being determined, because at the end of the day, as he indicated, the administrator cannot go and stand before Parliament and defend the formula. So he does that through the minister. So the minister gets a lot of information, a lot of feedback, a lot of interaction, a lot of discussions on even the scenarios that are adopted. And the ministry is deeply involved in the work of the administrator. Again, there's a certain portion of the common fund, a little amount which is even reserved, which is disbursed between the minister for local government and this assembly common fund. So there is a real functional relationship. It is the only ministry that has some responsibility and some relationship, functional relationship with this assembly common fund.
So in this relationship,
I want to establish that one. So it plays a certain oversight responsibility. The administrator, even though office is independent of the minister, there is a little oversight responsibility that the Minister of Local Government exercises over the Common Fund Administrator's office.
Yeah, so I was just asking that with this relationship existing, is there no way to find out a whiff of where some of these funds are going, where it may not be right, so that at least you can call the administrator to order, even though directly we have been told that he's semi-autonomous?
You see, what happened in the previous era, which I believe that was not the best, is that if you look at the decentralization process, we were one of the things that we had always been emphasizing is that we transfer competence, we transfer means, and when we say means, that is human resources and financial resources from the center to the district, and as much as possible make the district autonomous in terms of taking decisions that affect their development. But we realized that under the previous dispensation, an attempt was made to re-centralize some of these things by what we call bulk purchasing. And that one was most unfortunate. You have a situation where electric poles are purchased from the center and they are distributed. I remember very well that during the campaign time, I went to Pantiakwa, in some villages which were very far away from the high tension poles, there was no indication that high tension poles will come there in the distant future. And then they went and distributed electric poles to the communities, which, for me, and why, the poles were purchased from the center. So these centralized purchases has led to this, the cause of this. So when we took office, my predecessor, Honorable Yulitse, issued a stern instruction to the assembly that no, the ministry, and for that matter, the administrator, will not be encouraged to do any central purchasing for them. And that if any assembly wants to even do any purchasing from the center and they want the money to be paid from the office of the Common Fund, a resolution must be passed by the assembly, signed by the presiding member, the district chief executive, and the coordinating director, indicating what actions the assembly has urged appears for it to be taken before any deduction could be made at the center. But during the MPP, there were a lot of centralized purchases, there were a lot of deduction from the center, and that for me might have accounted for some of the situation we find ourselves.
So how will the money be recovered now?
Well, once public money, once it's public money, if it is detected that you are supposed to put a certain structure or a certain facility in a certain specific area, and you have collected money indicating that that structure has been put up, and then we go there and the structure is not there, whoever is involved, the documents are there. That is why the audit report has come out and named personalities and whatever facilities they were supposed to be put in place. So the ministry will take steps and ensure that through the appropriate, legal processes, government recoups whatever money has been taken out and have not been accounted for.
Mr. Samuel Osompofu, I want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Jedaku, you are still on the line, and when I posed that question in relation to whether there is a gap in the constitution, you wanted to come in. If you can please state your point there.
Before I go on, let me correct an impression my colleague has. He was talking about bulk purchasing. During my tenure of office, there was no time we did bulk purchasing at the center without resolution passed by the assembly. So nothing, even the distribution of leaders for
Hello, Mr. Jedaku. Please, your line is deteriorating. If you can please adjust your position a little for us, it will help.
Okay.
Yes, it's much better. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I said, even when the assemblies came up with the idea of acquiring wood making equipment, the grader, we did not just simply go in. We made those who wanted to sell it to these assemblies to go around themselves to the assemblies, talk to them, and those who were interested, pass the resolution, and the resolution forwarded to the ministry. So not all of them even were giving, because only those who were interested were giving, because they had passed their resolution. So that is the explanation for the bulk purchasing.
Okay.
Nobody sits in Accra and decides that we are dumping this on you. But let me say one thing also. You see, we keep on passing the bulk. When I was the presiding member for Sunyani at this assembly, the common fund has started operating. And the former minister, the first minister for the ministry, Honorable Kwame Nahoy, that was the time they purchased some vehicles for all the assemblies. And that was bulk purchasing done at the center. And we were not even aware, but we were only going to face the payment. So when he was paying visits, he came around and he came to Sunyani Assembly, and I asked him the question that we said the money was for development. Why was it that they were purchasing vehicles for the assembly? Did they check to find whether that was the need of the assembly? The answer I had, not in private, but at the assembly forum, was that vehicles were also part of development. So this bulk purchase at the center did not start with the MPP. So the minister should be aware of this.
Yes.
And should not be
getting
the impression that something wrong went on the MPP.
Okay. But Mr. Jedak, moving the argument forward, we are talking about the fact that something colossal has been found out, and the fact that nothing was done completely and money was paid out. Certainly, that is the concern. So, is the gap
that is
there?
Why we have the auditor, and the auditor comes out with his report.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the auditor general has come out with the report, definitely there were people who were responsible at that time. I think they will be the best people to answer.
Okay.
And then they will be the best people if there is any action to be taken, taken against those who were involved. But even if you pass the ball and say that the minister was supervising at that time, I will also go further and say that that time Ajay Dako was not the minister there.
Okay.
Even the supervision.
Mr. Jedaku, you've managed to establish that point very well. And we want to thank you very much for your time too this evening.
It's a pleasure.
Mr. Kodwo Ajedaku was a former Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, but he stressed that he wasn't the minister as of the time when the supposed malfeasance was reported. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, we want to remind you that our text line for today is 0272-1404. So if you are using the other one we've been using regularly, please replace it with this one. 0272-1404. But Ibrahim Mohammed Sherif is the General Secretary of the National Association of Local Authorities of Ghana, NALAG. And he's also on the line with us. Good evening, sir, and you are welcome.
Thank you very much, and thank you to your listeners.
I know you've seen the reports and what the auditors are saying about the District Assembly's Common Fund within the period, but we've been made to know that it is a bulk report. So, Mr. Jedaku helped us to see exactly at which point it happened. Who do you blame?
Well, thank you very much. I think that I have not had opportunity to read the text because I was so busy today. I was out of office. I didn't read it. But I think that if what you are saying is unfortunate, because well, it's this national assets, it's national money, and it's spent the way you are talking about. Even though I cannot comment on that because I don't know precisely what was contained in the report. And so I will find it very, very difficult to digest. Because if you don't have knowledge about something, then you will be talking in naivety. You may not understand what you are saying. So
yes.
That's my reaction.
Yeah, but for NALAG, what do you do to ensure that the taxpayers' monies are duly accounted for?
Well, I think due diligence must be done. Proper, prudent, financial management must be done. And so that's what we need to do. And before we do that, I think everything must be transparent so that monies are not wasted. And that is what we do. And we need to let our assemblies, our members understand the due process by which monies must be spent. And once they do understand this, I think that some of these problems will be kept.
So with this discovery, you say that it is only due diligence that can help the situation. Can't we put in place any other thing that can
The due diligence involves a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Due diligence involves a lot, not necessarily that people must be able to sit down, set their priorities right, set their budget right, and be able to monitor and implement whatever things that you want to do. So you have a lot of things in due diligence. And once that is done, I think that money cannot just be spent the way I'm hearing. But however, I don't know how much it is. I don't know the quantum. I don't know what happened. And so, for me, I think that we must put mechanisms in place such that whatever money, whether personal or 10 cities or 10,000, must be spent the way it should be spent.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Ibrahim Muhammad Sherif.
Thank you very much.
That is General Secretary of the National Association of Local Authorities of Ghana, NALAG. But the Director of the Local Government School in Accra, Dr. Esther Ofeh Abwaji, will be sharing a little bit of her expertise on the way forward on this particular matter, especially looking at the position of the Administrator of the District Assembly's Common Fund. Madam, we appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you very much.
Are you surprised to have such a report coming out in relation to administration of that fund?
I think that the findings that were there were ones that are likely or possible in any such undertaking. I'm saying this because it's been some time. The auditing process takes some time. This is what has been found out. What I have taken out of the whole thing is the Honorable Minister's comment that they'll have to sit down and review the findings in order to identify areas in which the issues have occurred and to take the appropriate action. But I also think that the measures that are being taken now may help to forestall such activities in the future or such findings in the future. For instance, there is a review of the common fund processes ongoing right now, and the issue will be discussed this week by the ministry and its partners. I also think that the work that has gone on in putting internal auditors in the assembly and strengthening the internal auditing system is going to go a long way. One area in which I would encourage my sector to be active is to strengthen monitoring and evaluation of the common fund and the extent to which spending adheres to supplementary budgets that are prepared in relation to the spending of the fund. So we have to invest very heavily in monitoring it so that we don't have to pick up the pieces after the deed has been done.
Yeah.
So these are some of the things I was thinking as I read the piece this morning.
But madam, looking at it, you help in training people who work within the establishments, that is talking about the local government structure. How can you help people to quickly alert on a possible malfeasance?
Yes, thank you very much. I think that it's very important to encourage chief executives to see internal auditors as people who will help in the checks and balance. I mean, too often we have adhered to the position that they are police people in our systems and so on. But if you learn to work with your internal auditor, your presiding member effectively, you forestall some of these problems, especially when the difficulties have occurred, I mean, through maybe through no fault of your own. I mean, for instance, if there's been indication that something has been purchased for you, you will follow up and see to it that the right thing has been done. And that helps to cut out mistakes. And it also helps to point the direction to malfeasance.
Again, I believe that we haven't invested heavily enough in monitoring, because the RTCs, for instance, were supposed to assist in monitoring. But the budget and the capacities and the logistics that they have are very minimal. But as an institute, what we are going to take from all of this is helping to strengthen monitoring capacities. We are also very much interested in the demand side, that is, what beneficiaries, civil society, and assembly members feel about how public monies are used in their name. So that apart from the government's monitoring systems, citizens and civil society organizations, community-based groups, can also take a key interest in the way that public money is used. In particular, Common Fund, which is supposed to promote local-level development.
Okay.
So those are the areas in which my institute is particularly interested in.
Madam, we'll also be watching and also putting out the relevant information when necessary. But for now, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Yes, indeed. We want to encourage the media to be up and doing, interested in helping to bring about the due diligence that my senior colleague referred to.
Thank you so much.
You are most welcome.
Dr. Esther Ofeh Abuaji is the director of the local government school in Accra. Behind the news, once again, our test line for today is 0272721404. Your statement is always made that fire is a good servant but can be a bad master. For many people who have fallen victim to a fire disaster, this is an understatement. Very often, fire reduces people to near purpose. On most occasions, when there is a blaze, the fire service struggles to put out the fire not only because of lack of equipment, but access. With so many fires, both in industrial setups and homes, have we as a country learned something useful to help put out fire easily? What about respect for building codes? Behind the news examines the thorny issues on the heels of another fire disaster at Osu Oxford Street in Accra. And joining us first to do this is Billy Anaglati, the Deputy Public Relations Officer of the Ghana National Fire Service. You are welcome, sir.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Are we making a headway fighting fire in this country?
Yes, of course, yes. I will tell you, we are making a very great headway in the fighting fire. You agree with me that recently we have taken delivery of fire tenders. Actually, the first consignment was 54 fire tenders that we've taken delivery of. Later on, last month, we have taken another 24 fire engines. You agree with me that the biggest problem that the fire service was having is lack of logistics. But with these tenders coming, that are coming to augment the one that we already have in the system, we are hoping that we'll be able to ensure that those fire stations that are not having tenders, we will equip them with these fire engines. And you know, many a times people say that they call us and we get there very late. It is not always true that we get there late. One of the reasons why some of those things happen is because some of the fire stations are not having a tender. So a tender is supposed to travel a long distance before getting to the fire scene. And we also hoping that we'll open new stations and equip them. If we are able to have fire stations in all the communities, some of these things will go up.
Okay. We are looking at
making a lot of headway in firefighting.
Yes, we want to explore it from a situation where sometimes, even when you get there, you see there is a high-rise building, you don't have the relevant equipment to get to where you need to get to put it out immediately. In that case, do you have the equipment like that?
Yeah, if you're talking of a high-rise building, at the moment, I will tell you no, we don't have the tentable ladder that we need to get to the highest point of some of the buildings that might be on fire. However, the good news is that with the consignment that the government has given onto us, the tentable ladder is going to be the next consignment that we'll be receiving. So I'm hoping that it will not be too long. I will be able to sort out that problem when we have the tentable ladder to be able to find high-rise building sites.
Not too long ago, you were talking about hydrants that were sealed, making it difficult for you to get water. Have you managed to sort that one out?
Yeah, we are still in a negotiating process with the water company. I also want to say that some of those ones that they themselves have sealed, because of the negotiations, they'll be able to open few of them. We are hoping that the rest will also be open and then they would have to install new ones. You get to some of the communities and you don't have hydrant at all. The biggest problem is that we don't have to have continue fighting fire from the tender, because within 2-3 minutes, before this new tender came, the biggest water capacity that we were having was only 800. But with this bigger one that come with 2,000 gallons and 3,000 gallons, of course, yes, it's coming to alleviate some of the hydrant problem. But that is not to say that we substitute the water capacity of this tender with the hydrant that are now in existence. So we are continuing to have negotiations with water companies to ensure that hydrants are opened and new ones are installed.
Let's generally look at your recommendations in relation to combating fire. What exactly do you suggest when fire breaks out?
Well, the first and foremost thing that we wish the public should do to assist them and for us to assist them as well is that the moment you declare that there is fire, the first thing you should do is to ensure that you call the fire system, no matter how small the fire is. We have realized that many a time when there is a fire outbreak in premises, people want to try their hands and see if they will be able to fight it. The worst thing, when the fire gets out of hand, that we are called. So we advise that the moment you declare there is fire, call the fire system. When we get there, the fire is out. That is a good news. So we will walk away. We don't even charge anybody. We don't even arrest anybody because fire, you know, breaks out in your premises. We also advise people that in case there is fire in your premises, the first thing you should also do is to alarm the rest of the people within the premises and ensure that everybody walk out from the premises. Don't ever say that you want to get back and pick anything. We also advise in the public that when we get to the fire ground to fight, people around, because of their lack of the technical expertise and knowledge, they think that they can fight fire with us, and they try to struggle with us and take the equipment. Similar thing happened yesterday when we were at Usu fighting this fire. It was when we realized that the problem was getting out of hand because of the people fighting with us with our equipment, we have to call in the police reinforcements, and they were able to reduce the tension and were able to fight this fire. So the public should allow us. We are the professionals. It is not a massive application of water that puts off fires. You know, if we are not careful, the damage from the water itself might be more than that of the
sir, that will make the fire go out. So what do you recommend for each fire, assuming they are doing something as they await your presence?
What we advise many attempts is that every home, every premises, every office is supposed to have a fire extinguisher. Every big fire starts with something small. So when you have a fire extinguisher and we train you as to how to use it, when the fire comes, you can use the extinguisher to put it out because it is at its initial stage or early stage. But if we don't have the extinguisher, that is why people find it difficult to fight this fire. We also advise that it is also necessary for people to have smoke detectors that will detect the fire with the slightest smoke that are invisible even to the eye. The smoke detector detecting the fire will allow you for you to know whether you are sleeping or not, to know that there is fire in there. So the people should have all these equipment, and so that when the fire comes, they can try their hands and see if they can fight it. But if you think that it is not safe for you to fight, just close all the doors and the windows in the room that there is fire in, so that you can starve the fire from oxygen. We all know oxygen supports burning. So when you are able to do this and you are waiting for us, you will confine the fire, you reduce the intensity of the fire from spreading from one point to the other. When we get there, we will do what is necessary.
Sometimes you go on inspection of premises. What do you look out for, especially when it's a public place or a commercial place?
There are several things that we look at when we get for inspection. You know, we look out for occupancy level. That is the number of people that are expected to be within the building at the time. Against the number of exits, the width of the exits, the traveling distance, that is, when there is fire in that premises, we want to see where you are working. If you'll be able to get out of the place through the exits before 4 minutes. Because within 4 minutes, when the fire occurs in the premise and then you are not able to control it, the next minute that will be added will enable the fire to engulf the whole premises. So we look at the occupancy level of the people. We also want to see if you have any fire detection system. We also want to ensure that all your electrical gadgets are properly intact. You get to some of the premises, you see that wires are hanging. You get to premises, wires are very old, 40, 50 years. the insulation on them have even become hard and brittle. You know, it breaks up and exposes the negative to the positive with the slightest wind. If you spark up, you get to premises, we look out to see the switches and the sockets. And if they are turning out from the whitish color to the brownish color, then you should know that there is overheating going within the socket. And within the shortest time, it could also start fire. We also want to see how you are using your electrical gadgets. Many a time people try to overload the socket, overload some of the switches. By the extension cable, they plug so many things on it. We also want to see if the whole premises is not overloaded, because you look at some of these premises, before the building was put up, they are only thinking of maybe a fan, a radio, or a few other electrical gadgets. But coming into being of this air conditioner and other sophisticated electrical gadgets, when they fix all this, they don't even try to upgrade the current that is going into the premises. So if this is not done, it means that the whole house is overloaded.
Yeah, okay.
So when there is power outage, you agree that many a time when power is restored, it comes with an excess current.
Yeah.
So when it comes this way, definitely there will be
problems. Mr. Billy Anaglati, I know there are other issues that we need to raise here for people to be very much aware, especially at a time when we are recording so many fires. But for now, because of our time, we'll end it here. I want to thank you very much for your time too.
Thank you very much for the opportunity for us to educate people.
That's the Deputy Public Relations Officer of the Ghana National Fire Service, Billy Anaglati. But recently, the AMA was also talking about the building code. It will make it much easier for people to be reached when there is fire. Numo Blafo is the Public Relations Officer of AMA. Numo, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
Looking at accessibility, especially when there are problems, what exactly is the AMA doing to ensure that people adhere strictly to your building code?
Thank you very much for this opportunity to at least expound some of the AMA's policies and objectives for the metropolis. We've experienced a lot of fire outbreaks within the metropolis within a short period of time. And it's something that has become a worry. As the AMA, we have a lot of, challenges. And it doesn't only relate to fires, but also flooding and so many other issues. But since we are speaking about fire outbreaks, I will just restrict myself to fire problems. What the AMA does is that before the AMA also issues a permit for a developer to develop or construct a building, we also have so many things that we look out for before that permit is issued. And as the fireman spoke about, we also look at the safety of the building that is being constructed, access, even space for the occupants, how many people are going to be within a structure, exit, and all that. When you're building up, we even go as far as giving you the extent of space that you need around the particular development before a permit is issued. But since so many people are eager to build, maybe for social problems or whatever, many people at times flout the directives of the assembly, and they put up buildings not even thinking of the dangers they themselves have put.
So,
the occupiers of people who will be within that structure.
Yeah. So, what are you going to do now since we are recording fires? And
yes,
sometimes.
What we have done as assembly is that sometimes it has been alleged that some of our building inspectors unilaterally give some kind of notes or undertakings to developers to develop. So we've pulled all our building inspectors from the sub-metro, so pulled them to the works department. That is where they belong. They've been divided into two groups. So now each group will be supervising a particular project at a time.
Mm-hmm.
We have two groups of building inspectors at the moment. We don't have an inspector in one sunburn group. What we have is we have two groups who have been who are going to check the development projects within the submetric. Therefore, we hope that people or developers will also cooperate with them so that everybody will meet the standard, that is the building regulation standard of the country, so that at least we wouldn't be having problems where a structure will be sitting on a fire hydrant or a structure will be sitting in the middle of a road or even a road reservation or even on a drain, so that we can forestall some of these problems of fire breaks whereby the fire service cannot have access to those places.
Noah Blaff, I want to thank you very much, but we'll be expanding on this issue of building codes and how exactly people should go by. We want to thank you. That's the public relations officer of the AMA. We have some of your tests here before we move on to the next story. AU Farouk Tamale is saying the detractors of STX will not succeed. And this one says, congrats GBC for your detailed news. And Jerry from Kwebe, why should NDC government still continue this blame game instead of correction? In case of anything, they should blame themselves. And Salim from Y is saying the Auditor General should always do well to bring out reports early enough so culprits can be apprehended early and quickly. And Soko from Afram Place, Ghana is moving forward. No shaking, President, no falling away. And Yakubu Adam, Ambition Damungo, the only way to eradicate something is to make it high-risk activity. All those who were involved must be made to face the law. We are moving on. It's Behind the News, linking up with all our regional FM stations. 6 months after engaging the government troops, 6 months after engaging the government troops in fierce battle, the rebel forces in Libya have carried the fight against Colonel Gaddafi to Tripoli, the capital. Reports say the rebels have captured some suburbs of Tripoli and are exchanging gunfire with the loyal forces of Colonel Gaddafi. The pro-Gaddafi forces are said to have pushed back the rebels in spite of earlier reports that the rebels have captured most parts of the capital. Experts say it will be very difficult for the Benghazi-based transitional council to rule Libya, even if Colonel Gaddafi is deposed. We just want to speak to Dr. Lloyd Amwa, a foreign policy expert and also a lecturer at Ashesi University in Accra, to look at the ramifications of the present action and what perhaps the other bodies can do. Dr. Lloyd Amwa, you are welcome once again to Behind the News.
Yes, thank you. Good evening.
Many are saying they saw it coming. Should Colonel Gaddafi have given up earlier?
Well, first and foremost, we must understand that Colonel Gaddafi put a lot of work in the kind of Libya that emerged after he deposed King Idris as a young Air Force officer. And so we have to understand that here is a man who would be trying to defend his legacy in Libya, and also his legacy, the way he sees it in the Arab world and also in Africa and in the greater global terrain. And so the idea that Gaddafi would have just succumbed and left reflects a certain, refusal to understand his mindset, and the fact that here was a young officer, barely in his 30s, who has been at the helm of affairs of an oil-rich country. We should not forget also that Gaddafi, for example, was one of the key guys who brought about the emergence of OPEC into a formidable geopolitical force when it comes to oil. It was because of him, and through his instrumentality that we had the oil price hikes in the 70s, 71 and 73, if I get the dates right. And so he insisted that the price of oil should go up to the benefit of Arab countries. Within that framework, it's to me complicated to assume that Gaddafi would have just succumbed and left. And so that's the position I take. I'm not surprised at all that he's taking a stand. Yes.
Yeah, but with the present position, some are saying he's got no options now.
You're right. I mean, he's facing immense firepower. The rebels have entered the capital, Tripoli, and his back is against the wall, but he's a soldier. And soldiers have rules of engagement. They have their honor to protect. As a leader and as a general in quotes, I think that for him, the code of honor might demand that he fights to his last drop of blood. And so I will look at this within that context. If he wants to go down, I think go down in history as a man who stood up against invading forces.
Yeah.
And that is the kind of terminology he's been using throughout. The news clearly indicates that.
Yeah. Dr. Amwan, some have expressed reservations about NATO's involvement to this extent. But we are looking for it after this. They are saying that perhaps a Somalia or an Iraq of some sort is now being created. Do you see it that way?
Well, there's no doubt about that. I think that events in Afghanistan, in Iraq, have shown that when external forces with their own geopolitical and strategic interests go in there and pursue what George Bush called regime change, the aftermath is a disaster. And so we are seeing in Libya, to my mind as an analyst, the potential for a catastrophic situation. Let's not forget that in Libya, there are tribal fears and tribal tensions that have gone on for about 700 years. I think that this situation would create a situation in which these tribes would go at each other's throats. If, for example, Gaddafi is able to get to his people himself, then, and even if he's murdered or he dies, I mean, these wounds will remain. And so the possibility of having a united Libya under Gaddafi, under the Gaddafi years, is going to be a mirage. And so we should be ready for what will essentially be a very bloody, confusing situation politically in Libya.
Is the world being hypocritical? Examples have been pointed at Syria, also in the Gulf.
Of course, I mean, we have to understand that for me, if you look at the issues critically, you would see that I think that it is the oil of Libya that is the focus. I think the interest of NATO and especially the West is to have some access to Libyan oil as a counterweight to China's increased presence on the global stage and the effect of that on oil supplies. Because if the West is able to have access to Libyan oil, that would mean that supplies of oil to the West in terms of transportation costs and time would be reduced. You know, and that would also mean that the competition that the West is now facing from China in other areas of the world for oil would somehow be ameliorated. You know, so Libya then becomes very an important pawn for the Western powers in a geostrategic geopolitical game. That is why they've not gone to Syria, for example. But of course, Syria has a far more powerful coherent army with a lot of weaponry than Libya. And so I think that NATO would hesitate because it will face intense firepower if it decides to go into Syria. When we take Yemen, well, if it comes to terrorism, it's useful in terms of the terrorism question, but not as geostrategically important. So in looking at Libya vis-a-vis the rest, we have to understand that there really are fundamental issues, of which oil is a factor, resources are a factor, which is why we are having Libya being pounded the way it is.
Dr. Lloyd Amwa, this is a fluid situation, so certainly we'll be revisiting and getting you to continue with that debate. But for now, I want to thank you so much for sharing your views with us.
Yeah, thank you too.
As behind the news on Radio Ghana, before we go, some of your tests here. Joseph from Sobiba, punishment should be meted out to those who embezzle funds to serve as a deterrent to others. And at Too Rich University College of Management Studies, I think office holders who did not respect the taxpayer must account for their actions. And Jidefo from Ho, all Ghanaians should wait and see how the government will deal with these money looters. Oh, Mr. President, will this crime also go under the carpet? And Francis Banankaiwa, Gaddafi should have learned from the arrest of Gbagbo and resigned honorably to prevent the disgrace about to visit him. Where is he now running to? And Andrew Manga, what may be the fate of other nationals in Tripoli, especially Ghanaians? You're asking that big question. And Emmanuel Phobia from Kumasi, is resuscitating accident victims, part of the fire service duties. Well, they have something they call rescue mission. It is part of it, as they do extrication. That is what I can tell you, even though they are not here. But this is where we part company for now. I want to thank so much George Kwaku at the controls and John Fobia, production assistant. By the production team, Christopher Sidu, Edmund Tete, and Bright Agama. My name is Kingsley Obinchere.